Good morning. Today's daf is daf nun ches. Okay, so we're behind. We're back on nun vav amud beis, and we start today with a mishnah. The mishnah is there are two mishnahs on nun vav amud beis. We're starting with the first mishnah on the page. It's right down the halfway down the page. It's kolak samim. So is the next mishnah as well. Okay, it's the first mishnah of kolak samim. Obviously. So any kesem that comes from Rekem. Now Rekem's a town, I don't know where the town is, but it's predominantly made up of non-Jews. Now, the blood of a non-Jew is Tahor. Now that's interesting because if you recall, not that long ago, Daf Lamedalit, so the Gemara says that as a Gzerah Derabanan, all non-Jews were considered to be Zavos. Right, and that Gzera was enacted, it was done in order to create more separation between Jew and non-Jew. So, take a look at Tosfos. Tosfos mi ben avdi kochavim tahor ma'afag avdi peperik benos kusim amar dedam avadis kochavim mitame keroko chameme ragleha. And not only are we saying that the non-Jews are going to be tame, but if you remember, Tosfos reminds us that we said earlier in the Masechta that even their blood is going to be like all other secretions of their body. The blood is going to be viewed as a mayan, as a wellspring of the body. So that means then, so that the non-Jew is tamea, and the discharge also is going to be tame as well. So if all that is correct, so then what's our Gemara doing over here? What's our Mishnah saying over here? So Tosfos writes, yeah, but we're talking about a kesem. We're just talking about a stain found on a garment. Stains found on a garment are only tamei midrabanan, not tamei midaraisa. So, in other words, the rabbis did not enact the kesem gzera on the already existing gzera of non-Jews. Right? I know this is a little complex, but the idea that a non-Jew is tamei to begin with is only derabanan. The idea that a kesem is tamei is only derabanan. So to that degree, to that extent, thank you. To that extent, the rabbis did not go so far. So if you have a kesem of a non-Jew, it's not going to be tamei at all. It's a gzera on top of a gzera. So the Mishnah says, again, let's go back to the Mishnah. Now Rav Yehuda disagrees because Rav Yehuda says that they're converts and they're making a mistake. Now, it's hard to understand what the machlokus is between the Tanakhama versus Rav Yehuda, meaning we're talking about an entire community, we're talking about a whole city, and we're having a debate whether they're Jewish or whether they're not Jewish. Now, we know, and we're going to get to in just a moment, the Kusim, we have exactly that debate. We argue about whether or not they're Jews or non-Jews. But there, the argument is somewhat more subtle. Meaning, they converted. We know they converted. It's just a question of, how did the conversion go down? Right? In Israel nowadays, you'll see it's the same debate by certain segments of the population. In Israel, I'll avoid the topic. But I'm just saying, you see these issues come up again and again. So fine, so in other words, that's a debate. But in other words, when we're talking about Rekem, when we're talking about a whole community of people, the Jews are not Jews, I mean, it's funny to try to figure out what the actual debate is going on over here. Anyway, Shehim Gerim Vitoim. Habayim Mibeno Avdikocham Tarim. Now, if the Kesem comes from a non-Jew, so there's nothing to talk about, it's Tar. Mibain Yisrael, Mibain Akusim. If it comes from a Jew, or if it comes from a Kusi, Rabbi Meir Mitame. Rabbi Meir says, it's Tame v'chachamim mitarim. The Chachamim say it's Tar, Mimnation l'nechshdu akismeyim, because they're not suspected over their Kesem. Now, what does that mean? They're not suspected? Meaning that if they come across a kesem, they won't just simply flippantly launder it and wash it and say, it's nothing. It's not a big deal. Now, the kaposik v'tami v'afilim v'tamud. Now, our Mishnah says, habayim merekem. Right? And our Mishnah doesn't make any distinction, meaning our Mishnah basically says that if you have a kesem coming from a non-Jewish community, so it's going to be tahor. And even if it comes from a non-Jewish community, like, for example, Talmud. Again, I don't know where that is, but, okay. Amar Rav Yochanan Zosamaris, Mekablan Gerim Talmud. So the Gemara says, okay, so in other words, what can we say definitively? Members of the city of Talmud are non-Jews. And if one of them wants to convert, by all means, go ahead, let them convert. Now, what's the other option? Meaning, if they're not non-Jews, what are they? So basically, Talmud, as we'll see in just a moment, is a city of, and hopefully you'll forgive me for saying this, but it's a city of rejects. Meaning, it's a group of rejected people, but why are they rejected? So what the Gemara now is entertaining, what Gemara is about to entertain is, really the members of the city of Talmud are really Jewish. But what are they? The Gemara is about to tell us they're mamzerim. And they to live in society is going to be very difficult for them, so they go out to the city of Talmud. So if somebody comes from the city of Talmud and says, "Hi, I'm from Talmud, I'd like to convert," obviously if they're a mamzer, there's nothing to talk about. They can't convert. So what Rav Yochanan is deducing from our Mishnah is that Rechem and all of its subsidiaries, which apparently also is Talmud, are basically not Jewish. And so therefore, if somebody comes from Talmud and wants to convert, that's fine. The Gemara says, "V'ha Rabbi Yochanan, v'sav yedam ritavayu, emekam ger mitamud." Now the Gemara says, now Rabbi Yochanan said as a definitive statement that you cannot accept ger from Talmud because they're in fact mamzerim. Rashi gives a little more history over here. Rashi says, right, that I'm sorry, take a look at the Rashi. Rashi says, that's Rashi explaining that you can accept Gerim. V'lo amrin, and Rashi says, and here's what we're not going to say, which is apparently what we're suggesting right now. Mamzerim heim shedisarvu bivnos aseres hashvatim v'ovikochem ve'evet abba abbas yisrael havlad mamzerim. That really Talmud is both a city made up of non-Jews and Jews went over there. Which Jews went over there? The Aseret HaShvatim, meaning that was one destination of the 10 lost tribes. Not lost, but dispersed and displaced by Sancheriv when he came in and he wiped out the northern kingdom. So some of them went to Talmud. Some of them married non-Jewish women. Some of the non-Jewish women married the local Goyim. And some of the Jewish women married of the Aseret HaShvatim married the locals, and then what that produces is a mamzer. Now you'll say to yourself, really? If a Jewish woman marries a non-Jewish man, what produces a mamzer? So there's an opinion out there that says that. That is an opinion. Not one which we accept lahalacha, but that is an opinion in the Gemara. And Rav Yochanan happens to be of that opinion as well. And so therefore, the Talmudian are mamzerim. So if they're mamzerim, so now they come back and they said, "We like to convert." What's there to talk about? You're Jewish. You're Jewish mamzer. Now, v'chitem azos v'lo svirilei. Now, the Gemara says, now, maybe what Rav Yochanan was saying about our Mishnah is zos ameris, meaning our Mishnah sounds like you can accept Gerim from Talmud, but he personally does not believe that. But the Gemara says, "V'am Rav Yochanan halachik is tam mishnah." We've said time and again throughout Shas that according to Rav Yochanan, the halacha falls like an anonymous mishnah. Amarai nenuva aliba de Rav Yochanan. So the Gemara says that's subject to a machlokus amaraim, meaning not every amora subscribes to this idea that if you have an anonymous mishnah, the halacha falls like the anonymous mishnah. There are some of his students who have attested to the fact that he said it. Some students said he did not say it, and so therefore, it must be that that is subject to a debate. Okay. Mibein Yisrael. Now, v'rabbanan Yisrael mitari deman mitamu. The Gemara says, now, when you read our Mishnah, and you just read it straight, it doesn't make any sense. Because our Mishnah says that if you have a kesem coming from a Jew or coming from a Kusi, so Rav Meir says it's tar, and the Chachamim, I'm sorry, Rav Meir says it's tameh, and the Chachamim say it's tahor. What? Chachamim say it's tahor. A kesem that comes from a Kusi or from a Jew. Meaning, you knocked everybody out. Meaning, there's no such thing as a tamei kesem.
You don't specify size here. Why do you assume that the size?
Yeah, size is an eighth parak discussion. So let's assume it's of the right size. So chesurim echzer v'hachi ketanis. So the Gemara says, okay. So, right, a little bit missing in the Mishnah. We'll just fill in a little bit of the gaps in the Mishnah. Mi bein Yisrael tamei. There we go. If the kesem comes from a Jew, it's tamei. Good. Mibein akusim. Now, what if the kesem comes from a kusi? Reb Meir mitamei v'dekusim geri amasim. V'chachamim mitaharin dekusim geri arayasim. Okay. So now the machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim, first of all, is only going on the Kusim. It's obviously not going on the Jew. If the Kesem comes from a Jew, there's nothing to talk about. Kesem is Tameh. And the machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim is the classic debate as to how did the conversion of the Kusim go.
Didn't we discuss that Kusim, but then you kind of bleeding or assumed to be Tameh all the time since they were babies before?
Correct. Because they don't know how to distinguish between Tahor blood versus Tameh blood. Okay, it's a fair point. So Ihachi Shalanechdu al Kismim Gerarazmi Bailey. So the Gemara says that's a funny explanation, meaning if the whole debate between Rav Meir and the Chachamim is all predicated about the actual conversion of the Kusi, why doesn't the Mishnah just say that? Meaning and the Mishnah seems to be presenting a different explanation altogether, nothing to do with the actual conversion. Alahachi Kamar, the Gemara says that's a very good point. So let's go over this one more time. Mibein Yisrael, Mibein Akusim, Tameim. If the Kesem comes from a Jew, or if it comes from a Kusi, it's Tamei. Dekusim Gerei Emesein. Hanimtsaim Ba'are Yisrael, Tahorim, Shalonechshadu Al Kismeim. What if I find a Kesem in a Jewish city? Meaning, not, in other words, we don't know who it came from, just simply found it, lying in the street. Interestingly enough, the halacha is that if I find a garment just lying out there in the street with a kesem on it, and even if it's a Jewish city, or not even, but if it's a Jewish city, it's going to be Torah. Shalo nechshadu al kismehem v'itznui mitznai elohu. Because had it belonged to a Jew would not just simply let it go into the city. Because the Jew would understand, this is a kesem, it may be tameh, let me hold it, show it to a Rav. In other words, they know how to take care of it. They just want to leave around. Hanimtsaim ba'arei kusim. Now we'll understand the next part of the Mishnah. Now we're going to describe the same scenario where we find a kesem, meaning it's unidentified. We don't know who it belongs to. It's just a garment with a bloodstain on it, and it's lying out in the city. Rabbi Meir Matami did nechshadu al kismayim, v'chachamim matam shalom nechshadu al kismayim. And then the question is, do the kusim know how to treat it? Meaning, if they find it, are they careful with it? That's a machlokas between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. This machlokas has nothing to do with their conversion. Let's assume that they are Jewish. Let's assume that their bloodstains are Tamei. Let's assume all that. The only debate over here in the Mishnah between Rav Meir and the Chachamim is, do they know how to treat it? Do they treat it with the proper respect and attention that it deserves? So Rav Meir says, no, they don't. They simply do not care. They just simply throw it out. And the Chachamim say no. They understand that, being that this is a kesem and it's a possible uterine discharge, so therefore they treat it accordingly. So if you find it in the street, if you find one lying out in the street, it does not belong to the kusi; it must belong to some non-Jew.
Obviously, holds that their gerishim was slightly good enough.
Correct. That would be the right way to understand our Mishnah. Okay, and the last Mishnah of the seventh parak. Kol haksamim nimsayim b'chol makom tahorim chutz min nimsayim b'chadarim uvisfivos beis hatameos. So you find a kesem lying out there, so it's going to be tahor. As we just described a moment ago, if it's a Jewish community, and Rashi over here in the Mishnah says we're talking about in a Jewish community, so a Jew, having had a kesem, won't just simply throw it out into the street. Won't happen. Meaning they know how to take care of it. They're matznia. They hide it. They put it away. And they know how to properly take care of it. So if you find a kesem, a bloodstained garment just lying around the street in a Jewish community, it's tahor. If you find it in a cheder, or in a room, or if you find it bebeis hatameos, now, Beis HaTameos, take a look at Rashi over here. Very interesting Rashi. Beis HaTameos, Cheder Shehanashim Mishtamshos Bo B'Meidin Dosam. I know often we often speak about the issue of how do you live with a woman who is anida and you want to remain tahor. It's very, very challenging. It's extraordinarily challenging. But Rashi over here describes, I know we banter about sometimes about how they have their own separate house when they're anida. That may be an exaggeration, but not by much. Meaning Rashi over here describes that they had their own separate room. Meaning that when they were anida, and the rest of the family wanted to stay in the state, remain in the state of Tahara, so they had their own separate room that they would go into. That's what Rashi says. Okay.
So they can't touch anything in the other house. They can't sit on anything.
Right, sitting on something, lying down on something,
do the dishes,
food.
That must be great.
From the vacation.
Yeah, that must be great.
A week off. Fine. So, in other words, if you find the kesem in a room or a svivas beis hatameos or in these nida rooms, so then obviously it's going to be a kesem beis hatameos or kusim etamim ba'ol. Now, you have these rooms of the kusi. So the Mishnah is going to say something which at first is going to sound rather remarkable. Etamim ba'ol, meaning that room is tumas ol. You walk into that room, you become tame through a transmission of tuma of a mace.
Just for kusim.
For kusim. Now, who, right, who died? What's going on over here? Mibnei shehim kovrim sham es nafalim. Because if they have a stillbirth, what they do is they bury it right there in the room.
They had dirt floors.
Now, Rav Yehuda Amar Lo, Yikovrim Ela Mashlichim V'chaya Goras. Now, Rav Yehuda disagrees. He says that's not true. They would throw throw it out, and a wild animal would come and take it away. Now, all this, of course, is distasteful. But as the Gemara will point out in just a moment, it seems like these kusim do not believe that the stillbirth needs to be buried. Okay, we'll talk more about that in just a moment. Now, kusim have limited credibility. Limited. Because a kusi who is somewhat of a believer in halacha, somewhat of not of a believer in halacha, so really your ne'aman is your credibility is only something that you subscribe to. If you don't subscribe to a particular mitzvah, so you don't have credibility over that mitzvah. So, watch carefully now as the Mishnah talks about what they can and cannot testify about. So the first thing the Mishnah said, I read already, Ne'amanim lama kavanu shamas ha'nafalim o lo kavanu. They could say that they bury the nafal or they did not bury the nafal. Ne'amanim lama ala behema yim bichreim lo bichra. If they sell you an animal, a kusi, and they say, this animal has already given birth. So that means that the next animal that comes out from this animal is not a bichor, does not have kedushas bichor, and you're fine. Now, the kusi has credibility to make such a declaration, and Ne'amanim al tzion kvaros. And if they come and they tell you, this is where a coffin was buried, this is where a body was buried, and they mark off the area of the grave, so they are Ne'aman, they're believed about that. Ne'amanim lo l'schachos v'lo l'pravos. But they're not believed on tzchach, on para, and on beis apras. Stay tuned. We're going to, in the Gemara, we're going to explain all three of those things. But here's a basic rule. If it's a particular mitzvah they don't subscribe to, and the kusim pick and choose, right? The Gemara in Chulin says, right, let's remember, it's the beginning of Chulin. It says that they don't do all the mitzvos. The ones they do, they're really good about, sometimes even a little bit better than a Jew, but the ones that they don't do, they don't do. Meaning they pick and choose their spots. So if it's something that, if it's a mitzvah that they don't subscribe to, so then they have no credibility. If it's a mitzvah they do subscribe to, so they do have a credibility. It's interesting. The whole thing is interesting.
We don't have a group like that where we give them partial credibility anymore.
I don't think so. Now, my
don't say that about conservative.
No.
Only we
go only when we don't need it. Right. My drosh, top of Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, the Gemara now asks a very simple question. So, how does that work? Meaning, we're going back to one of the first points we made in the Mishnah regarding the kusi and the nafal. A kusi has a stillborn born in their house, and they don't bury it. Either right there in the room, they just kind of tuck it away under the ground. I know that's burial, but that's not really burial. Burying in a house is not burial. Or what they would do is they would throw it out. That's how Rav Yehuda described it. But they didn't bury the nafal. Why not? So they darshan. Now, I know The word darshaning and kusi really don't go hand in hand. Meaning, part of being a kusi is that you read the Torah. If the Torah says it, fine. If the Torah doesn't say it, fine. You don't really delve into the Torah. That's our job. Meaning, we're the traditionalists, the one with the Mesorah. We delve into the Pesukim, so they don't. But okay. But how do they understand? Let's put it that way. How do they understand that you don't have to bury an ephah, which is wrong, patently wrong? But how do they get there? So the Torah says, "Lo sasi gvoreicha asher gavlu rishonim menachlascha." Now the pasuk being described over here is you can't encroach. I have a property line. I can't encroach on my neighbor's property. Good. That's called stealing. Now it's interesting. How do we get from encroachment to not burying a stillborn? So right. So this is how they understand the pasuk. Kol sheyesh lo nachla, yesh lo gvul. Kol sheein lo nachla, ein lo gvul. If I may say this, it almost sounds like a real drasha, but it's not. If you have nachla, meaning if you can inherit, so then you have property lines, delineation. And if you don't have nachla, so then you don't have property lines. So in other words, a nephil, he doesn't stand to inherit, meaning he's not a...
He didn't live.
So he's not going to inherit. So because he's not going to inherit, so therefore he doesn't have a gvul. Gvul over here means in the sense of being buried and having, quote-unquote, property lines upon being buried.
Where did the cushion get there?
I was going to say, the whole thing is strange. The whole thing. So, ein lo gvul ne'manim lomar, I'm sorry. Nachle ish lo gvul, kol she'en lo nachle ein lo gvul. Ne'manim lomar, kavarnu ve, so the Gemara says, now, they have credibility and they can say, kavarnu. You know what? We buried somebody right over here. So the Gemara now, and this is going to be a very common question that's asked by the Kusi, and that's the following. Look, the Kusi may be careful about some mitzvahs they do. And if it's a person who's a bona fide human, I mean human, meaning he lived, so they would absolutely bury the person. Okay. And they're also subscribed to the whole idea of tumah. That's all true. But here's a basic thing that the Kusim don't really believe in. And that is the following. They don't care if somebody else does an Aveira. Now we do. Because we have a pasuk in the Torah, it's called Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mechshol. I cannot put a stumbling block in front of another person. So I can't aid and abet somebody else from doing an Aveira. Right? They don't believe in that. Now, they don't believe in that. I just quoted a pasuk in the Chumash. How can they not believe in it? Because the pasuk in the Chumash says, don't put a stumbling block in the path of a blind man. So if you're a kusi, you're like, okay, I promise. I will not put a stumbling block in the path of a blind man. But that's it. In other words, they don't go any further with that pasuk. In other words, we understand that the Lifnei Iver applies not just to the literal translation, but also, you see somebody who's quote-unquote blind, meaning he doesn't know about a particular halacha, he doesn't know about Nevera, don't help him, don't aid, don't abet. They don't believe in that, because that's not the simple reading of the Pasuk. So therefore, the Kusi comes over and says, look, there's a grave right over there. How does he have any credibility? He simply doesn't care about whether you do or you do not violate an Aveira. Okay? So in other words, really, the question's really a piercing question. Meaning, how could they have any credibility whatsoever if they don't care whether you do or don't do an Aveira?
What about the Ve'afkalera HaKamoha?
Okay, but I'll be nice. I just... Okay, the logic is fair. It's fair logic, but...
That goes along with their being...
It means being a good... Right. In other words, Lifnei Iver is basically be a mensch. I agree. Okay.
Maliciously competent?
Maliciously
competent?
So watch. So, Amar Rabbi Abba Bekoin Omei Sham. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you why he has credibility. It's not because he's just simply telling you that there was no grave over here, but also a kusi who's a Kohen happens to be standing right over there. Now, right, right. Ben already picked up how ridiculous a statement that just was. Meaning a kusi who's a Kohen. Kusi are a group of people from the town of Kusa, which is out there in Bavel, and they were brought in by Sancheriv when he extracted the 10 lost tribes. To suggest that there's a Kusi who's also a Kohen is difficult, because they're all converts. No one converted to becoming a Kohen. So it's strange. What I'm saying is strange, but I'm not saying it. The Gemara is saying it. That there's a Kusi who's a Kohen. So it could very well be that the Kusi imported Kohanim, so that they would have Kohanim as part of their community.
Maybe the Kohen married into their community.
Right. Right.
Oh, yeah.
It says here, descendants of the Kohen brought by the Assyrian kings to teach the Kusi.
Okay, good. Right, okay, good. So you have to say something along those lines.
Yeah, married
in
is a great
one. The Gemara makes a suggestion, well, maybe this Kohen is Tameh. So, Danaki Truma Biyadeh, he's holding Truma. So the Gemara says, V'demah Truma Tameh, maybe the Truma is Tameh, Dekach Hamineh. So he's eating from the Truma. So, Yahachi Maila Meimah. So now, so really what the Kusi is doing is he's not telling you this verbally, he's telling you this with his actions. Meaning again, we'll start with the premise that if the Kusi is a believer in this particular mitzvah, he really does believe in it. A Kusi believes in Tuma. A Kusi believes in Truma. A Kusi believes that Truma cannot be eaten in the state of Tuma. So now you're watching a Kohen stand in a particular place and he's eating Truma over there. So then, that's it. In other words, he has credibility. Not because he says it, but because he's actually doing it. So the Gemara says, Now, if so, then what's the Chiddush? The Chiddush is that maybe you can make the argument he doesn't know. Remember, we talked about earlier in the Masechta how if it's just gestation of 30 days, 35 days, that's nothing. Gestation of 40 days, that's already a baby, right? That's already a developing fetus, which is going to give off tuma if in fact it comes out. Maybe the Kusi doesn't know the difference. Maybe the Kusi simply is not sensitive to these halachas. The Gemara says that's the chiddush of our Mishnah. You can assume he knows about this. Again, we're going to keep running into the same problem again. The Kusi is telling you, don't worry, this animal gave birth to already to a firstborn. And the Gemara's question is again, look, he may believe in this whole idea of Bechor, but because he says so, he doesn't care whether you do or do not violate Kedusha's Bechor. So how can you believe him? So I'm Rabbi Chiya Barab, I'm Rabbi Yochim, because it's Va'oved. So the Gemara says, well, you actually watch him, you see him shearing the animal, working the animal. If it's a Bechor, these things are forbidden. So So the Gemara says, okay, so again, it's based on his actions, not what he says. So what I might have thought is he doesn't know about Tinuf, right? Remember Tinuf? That if an animal has some sort of miscarriage, it doesn't even look like a baby. It was like just a clot, a blood clot coming out of the animal. So under certain circumstances, that could be viewed as a bechor, and everything that's coming out afterwards is a pashat. Maybe the Kusi doesn't know about this. Kamash malad. So the Gemara, now interesting Gemara. The Gemara says they can identify and mark off a grave. So the Gemara says that's only a din d'rabbanan, marking off a grave. So the Gemara says, let me just articulate the Gemara's question. If it's only a din d'rabbanan, so how can you believe the Kusim? Right? Don't they not subscribe in general to dinei d'rabbanan? So the Gemara says, no, kevin d'ksive, mizar zahiri bei d'ksiv. So the Gemara says, well, there is a pasuk in Navi. Now the Kusim, they don't have Daf Yomi, they're not learning Baba Basra, they're not learning Masechta Nida, but they do learn their Chumash and they learn their Nach as well. And the pasuk in Yecheskel says, Rei etzem Adam ubana etzlot Sion. So you see a bone and you mark it off. The word Sion, right? I know, it's, you know, it also refers to the movement of Zionism, but the word Sion in its, right, in its very literal sense, just simply means mark off.
A sign.
An outline, so to say. Ubana etzlot Sion. So, since it's mentioned in Yecheskel, so therefore, they follow. They do follow it. Aval einem anemal schachos. Schachos did not. So the Gemara now is going to explain what they don't have credibility over. And by the way, now that we've said everything we've said, when we're saying they don't have credibility, it means not only if they say it, but even if they do it, They just simply don't have credibility, and that's three things that are mentioned in the Mishnah: schachos, praos, and beis hapras. Now, schachos. Let's go step by step. What is that? Elohein schachos, ilan amesach al aretz. It is ilan amesach al aretz. Now let's take a look at Rashi, because Rashi over here goes through the background information. You have a tree. Now, a tree has these very, very long branches, and as we know, if you have mace underneath the branch, so Tumas Ohel now is going to transfer the Tumah underneath the entire area of the branch. Rashi writes, I'm reading Rashi inside. V'usamach l'derech mace akvaros v'zimnin d'misrami ben ashmashos v'kavrei hasam. Sometimes there's a late Friday afternoon burial, and there just simply is not enough time to go all the way to the cemetery, so they would bury right underneath this tree. V'im ha'anafim muvdalim she'in ol shalem, and let's say that these branches now are not all together. There's a branch here, there's a branch here, there's a branch here, and they're separated. V'yadu avadish she'esh kever tachas ha'olos v'in yadua ezehu. Now here's what you know for a fact. You know that there was burial that took place underneath this tree. You just simply don't know under which branch the burial took place. V'akusi me'ad al-achad zetahar. And so what the Kusi says is, look, I'm pointing to one and I know for a fact this is not the one that the mace is buried underneath. Eino netman lefisha eino chash ala safek v'tola atuma ba'ol sheini misafek. The Kusi simply is not worried about this whole concept of safek. Meaning for the Kusi, if it's a safek, it's okay. Right? They don't err on the side of caution. That's life as a Kusi. And so therefore the Kusi says, look, what difference does it make? Meaning if it's buried under one, this is not the one, it's fine. Okay. So that is...
So how could that be a problem? He knows that it's not buried under this branch.
Yeah, but he doesn't, in other words, for him, as long as it's a suffix, he simply does not care.
Oh, so he's not sure that it's not buried.
He's not sure, he's just saying...
Don't we have the principle that if it's suffix, you want
to... Yes, yes, that's correct. And I guess what you're going to have to say, very good point, I guess what you're going to have to say in explanation of Rashi doesn't say this, I'm saying this, is that this is a Rishus HaYachid. Now remember, Rishus HaRab and Rishus HaYachid in Tumah Tahara is not the same as in Shabbos. Rishus HaYachid just simply means it's a private area. It's a non-populated area. Okay. Peros, if you take a look now at the next thing. Sorry, did I read it in the Gemara? Schachos did not elan. Schachos elan meisach alaris. Yes, I did. Peros. Okay, we're up to the next one. Did not. Avanin peros ayotim in agadar. Now, peros is the following. I have a wall, and I have rocks coming out of the wall, creating an oil, creating a small little roof. Now Rashi over here writes as follows: Gedol savoltos min hageder v'kavru tachas achas mehem v'inanu yodim tachas eza mehem. Same basic story, where I know that there's a mace buried under one of these protruding rocks. I simply do not know which one. And now I turn to the Kusi and I say, "Do you know?" And he says, "Sure." Uva Kusi ve'ed al miksasim shein taharos inu neman. And he points, that rock is fine, and that rock is fine. And he simply has no credibility. Again, Rashi says the same reason. Mishum delesfek alochayish v'tola safik ba'acheros. Because for him, he really doesn't know. For him, it's all a safik, it's all fine. Okay. And finally, beis hapras. Now, we know the beis hapras. Now, here the Gemara is a little bit out of order. First, and the Gemara does this almost every time in when it discusses the beis hapras. First, the Gemara throws out the kulas, meaning there are certain leniencies by a beis hapras. Now, first of all, what is a beis hapras? Well, the Gemara is going to explain that in just a moment. But first, the kulas. I'm Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, menafech adam beis hapras v'holech. What you can do is, now, we're worried about bone chips in the beis hapras. The Gemara is about to explain why in just a second. So if you want to, you can blow your way through a beis hapras. I have a visual of this. It must be so slow and so painstaking.
Oh, yeah, right.
And what are you doing? You're getting down on your hands and knees and you're blowing your way through?
You're a Cohen.
Okay. I don't quite, in other words, or you have maybe like one of those like leaf blowers. I'm sure that's what the Gemara had in mind. Okay. I'm not sure, but anyway, menafech adam beis apras vaolech. Rav Yehuda bar Ami mishmed the Rav Yehuda amre beis apras nidash tahor. If there's a path that's already beaten down, trodden down, so therefore you can rest assured that there's no longer any bone chips on this path, and that path takes you through a beis apras, that's fine. Vitana. And then the Gemara quotes the Mishnah. Hachorish beis akvaros. What happened? How do we get to a beis apras? Somebody, by accident, plowed through a cemetery. And so what this person did, not realizing it, is he basically took all the bones, all the human remains, and basically spread it out. And so now you have bones all over the field. Now, bones, remember, don't give off Tumas Ohel, only give off Tumas Maga, Tumas Masa, not Tumas Ohel. But the concern is that you're walking through the field and you may step on a bone, and you become tummy.
If you have a complete set of bones,
yes, we did say that. But here, because of the plow, and the plow plowed through, so it's the only assumption is that there are little bone chips here and there. Harei ze osa beis apras, v'ad kamu osa, m'lo ma'ana, me'a ama. So how much area does it create of possibility? 100 by 100 amas. Right? Well, I guess what you do is you figure the center of where the grave actually was, and then you go
in each direction.
Now, I don't think it's 100 in each direction. I think it's a total of 100. I may be wrong about that. I think it's a total of 100. 100 amas by 100 square amas is now the full full distance of this beis apras, which, by the way, says the Mishnah is beis arba'a sa'in.
If you would, radius of a circle, or is it a square?
Sounds more like a square, which I know sounds funny because, well, maybe because that's how they're plowing. They're plowing in a square shape, maybe. Now, base arba sa'im. Now, if you would like to, we could turn this linear measurement into a volume measurement. Remember, back in the good old days, land was assessed by the amount of seeds it could plant. You could plant in it, so it's a base arba sa'in. 4 sa'as of seed could be planted in 100 by 100. And by the way, Rav Yossi Omer Chamesh, it's not 4 sa'ah, it's 5 sa'ah. So he believes that it's actually a larger area of land. V'lam Amner, the Gemara says, now they're not believing. Atanya Sada Shava Ba Kever Neman Kusil Omer Ein Sham Kever Lefi Shein Ma'id Al Gufal Shel Kever. Now the Gemara says, now we have other statements. This is a Braisa that says a Kusi can testify to a grave. And Elon Chu Mesa Khalaritz Naman Lamar Intahtav Kever Lefishina made al Gufal Shel Kever. He could say there's no grave under this tree. I'm Rav Yochanan Ben Mahalech Uva al Pnekula. Again, we're talking about not where he just testified, but we actually see him walking up and down the path. Now, what are we talking about? We're talking about he's a Kohen. Okay, I don't know. Ihachi ma'ala meimra ma'udetema ritzu nafka kamash malan. Now, if he's walking up and down the path, and he's walking through the entire field, he's walking underneath the entire tree. So, if that's true, isn't that evidence that it's fine? So the Gemara says, well, maybe there's a small ritzu, maybe there's a small path. Okay. Zaklal l'suya ma'ala l'suya t'chumim v'yayin nesach. Things that kusim don't. Any, right, and so we suggested earlier maybe that they imported Kohanim. Now the Gemara finally says, what about the last thing of the Mishnah, the Zaklal? The Gemara classically does this. The Mishnah is not just giving a summary statement, but the Mishnah is alluding to other things. Kusim don't believe in, they don't believe in Tchum. They don't believe in Yayin Nesach. Tchum Shabbos is the Din D'Rabbanan. The Kusim reject that. And Yayin Nesach, Kusim don't care if a non-Jew touches wine.
They're almost non-Jews themselves.
Well, I'm saying they... Okay. Hadron Alach Dam Hanida, and that is the end of the seventh parak of Nida. Okay, we begin the eighth parak. And with the beginning of the eighth parak now, we move totally to the topic of Kesem. The eighth parak is a short parak, an extraordinarily important perek. I mean, they're all important, please don't get me wrong, but the eighth perek really touches on very basic halacha lamaasa. Now, a woman, in order to become a nida, has a discharge of blood, but that's not enough. For a woman to become a nida, she needs a discharge of blood and she needs a hargasha. Now, interestingly enough, the Mishnayos never say it.
Okay? It's
not
Midrabanan, though,
no?
Hargasha?
No.
It's the right?
In order for a woman to become a nida, she needs to have not just a flow of blood, but with a physical sensation. Now, the Mishnayos never describe this. The Mishnayos never say this. The Gemara will say it clearly. It's, in fact, coming up in just a moment. What physical sensation are we talking about? So, being that right now the population of people that I'm addressing is not a female population, so we're already at a loss in terms of understanding what the Hargasha is. But even after I describe it, it's also going to be something that we're not familiar with.
So
one possibility...
Women never go into Nida.
One possibility is, the Hargasha is that it's a sensation of the opening of the cervix. This is suggested by Tosfos. Tosfos is in the very beginning of the Masechta. It's on Daf Dalet and Aleph, if you'd like to see the Tosfos inside. The Tosfos over there describes that the Hargasha is Psichas HaKever. It's the opening up of her cervix. Okay, that's one possibility of what this Hargasha is. If you take a look at the Rambam writes, it's Nizdazea Kol Gufo. Right, I'm paraphrasing. I don't have a Rambam in front of me. It's where she feels her whole body shaking and shuddering.
Could be menstrual cramps, maybe?
Something along those lines. But in other words, it's acute. The pain, the sensation is an acute sensation.
The menstrual cramps are very
acute. Okay, good. Again, talking to a person who has not experienced. So the... So those are two possibilities. What about, I know this is going to sound funny, but what about just simply the sensation of liquid coming out of her body? Interestingly enough, they may not constitute a hargasha. Again, all this is discussed already in the Rishonim, meaning the Gemara doesn't actually tell us what the hargasha is, and it may be just simply the sensation of liquid coming out of her body may not be a hargasha, up for debate. Now, okay. And so what I'm essentially telling you is, if what I'm saying is correct, let's assume it is, I'm essentially telling you that if a woman sees blood, but without the sense of a hargasha, she is not a nida min haTorah. I'll repeat. A woman sees blood, but does not have that hargasha, she is not a nida min haTorah. Now that's interesting. Okay, and... Right, you can understand that this obviously would be a tremendous leniency and also would lead to a tremendous amount of confusion. So the Chachamim legislated that even if the woman did not have the Hargasha, going to treat her like a Nida. Which brings us to the topic of Kesem. A Kesem is a stain found on her clothing. So if she finds a stain on her clothing, obviously there was no Hargasha. Meaning she would have known if the blood came out if there was a Hargasha. We're going to talk over the course of the remaining time that we have left today and tomorrow in terms of sensations that may mask the Hargasha. Okay? But before we get to that, though, in other words, if she finds a stain on her clothing, so that means that there is a chance that that came out of her body, but even if it did, it was without a Hargasha, so she'll be a Nida Midrabanan. But we need to have at least some semblance, some evidence that it came out of her. The blood came out of her. As we're going to see over the course of this perek, this short perek, under certain circumstances, under certain occasions, we can safely say, yes, yeah, she found blood on her undergarment, or let me just say it more generally. She found blood on her garments, but it didn't come from her. And if we can say that with some assurances that it didn't come from her, she's fine. Okay, and so what our perek will do, the eighth perek will do, is basically give us a sense of when do we associate the blood to her and when do we not associate the blood with her. For blood found both on her body and on her garments. And mind you, by the way, that even if she finds blood on her and on her garments, it could be a cut. It doesn't necessarily have to be menstrual blood. That's another consideration. All this is taken into consideration. We start a Mishnah. Haroa kesem. Al basara. So she first, we'll start off with a kesem found on her body. Right? So the stain is not found on her clothing. It's found actually on her skin. So keneged beis hatorfa tameya. So if it's found somewhere opposite her private area, her genital area, so she's tameya. Shelo keneged beis hatorfa. But if it's not opposite the beis hatorfa, so then she's fine. So for as an example, al keva varosh gorla tameya. If she finds it on her heel or on her foot, she's tameya, because it's possible that it came out from oso amakom and it just dropped right onto her foot. Al shokal ve al pirsasa. What if it comes out on her leg, on her thigh? So mibifnim tameya. If it's on her inner thigh, she's tameya. Mibachutz. What if it's found on her outer thigh? Tahora. She'll be fine. Al hatzdadim. Now we talked about inner thigh and outer thigh. What about the front of her leg? What about the back of her leg? Mikana mikana tahora. The Mishnah says that's fine. Raza chaluka. What if she finds it on her clothing? Minacha gor lamata tameya. If it's below the belt, she's tameya. Minacha gor lamala tahora. If it's above the belt, she's fine. If she finds it on a sleeve, if it's on a part of the sleeve where actually it could reach below the belt, meaning so if let's say it's on the sleeve closer to her hand, where it's possible that it went along her private area, she's tameya. V'im lav tahara. Haisa poshtasa miskasa baba laila. Let's say she used a clothing as a blanket. So then, all bets are off. Kol makom shenimtza bo kesem tameya. So there, we're not going to segregate the clothing into different parts, because when she's sleeping, she tosses and turns while she's sleeping. So if you find blood anywhere on the garment, she'll be tameya. Memneshu chozer v'chein bepulyos. And also, if she has a snuggly. Right? Am I saying it right? Right, you know that thing that...
Blankie.
Whatever that thing is called. Amar Shmuel. Now here we go. Okay, and here it is, meaning tucked away in Nida, Daphne, Zainam at Beis. I know, we're so far into Masechta, and now we're going to touch on one of the most fundamental issues regarding a Nida. Batka Karka Olam Yashva Allah. Shmuel describes the following. She sits on a ground. She first does a check of the ground before she sits on it. And she sits on the ground. And then Umasa Damalaha. And then she gets up, and there's blood on the ground. Mm. But she didn't feel anything. Tahora.
Maybe assuming that's not dried blood.
Right. Yeah. Tahora. She's not Anida. Shenemar bifsara ad shetargish bifsara. She needs to feel it. She is not Anida until she feels it. So says Shmuel. And so with this comes the basic halacha that a woman to be a Nida requires a Hargasha. Now, already you should realize that there's a problem, because we just learned the Mishnah, and the Mishnah gave much description of finding a bloodstain on an article of clothing, and as long as that is a candidate for that blood to have come out of her body, out of her uterus, so she's a Nida. There was no Hargasha in the Mishnah.
If this is on the ground, is it considered a bloodstain? Same thing as a bloodstain on a
Good, very good. Okay, hold your thought. You're anticipating the Gemara later on, okay, and it's a very good thought. Now, high bifsara. Now, the Gemara starts off with first some technical issues. High bifsara mi bialeisha mitami bivnim kebachutz. First of all, didn't we dash in that pasuk already earlier in the Masechta? And didn't we say that even though the blood has not exited her body, as long as the blood has left her uterus and entered into the canal, she is a nida. So imkein lemakra bibasar, my bivsara, shmamina achatagish bivsara. The extra hay gives us two halachas. The first halacha is that she will be a nida once the blood enters into the canal, and the second halacha is that she has to have a sensation. Do you remember earlier in the Masech, we also darshan the pasuk, and we said that the blood has to come and make physical contact with her canal, meaning that if the blood is enveloped in some sort of mass, or as we described earlier in the Masechta, let's say there was a tube inserted so that the blood doesn't actually make contact with the canal, she'll be tahara, tarti shmamina. So the Gemara says, well, we learn out both points from the word bivsara. Okay, you can't make two drushas from one pasuk. That's a basic rule. You take a look at the Rishonim, they address this issue. Notably, look at the Chidushi Haran. So it says, my notes on the side of the Gemara. Tashma, the Gemara says, let's go through a little bit of the Gemara over here. The Gemara is basically just going to fire away. Because Shmuel says that a woman doesn't need a hargasha. Sorry. Shmuel says that a woman needs to have a hargasha. In order for it to be a nida, here we go. Let's fire away. We're going to shoot out four questions which seem to be very damning against Shmuel. Number one, Aisha Shiyosetzar Chavras Adam Rabbi Meir Omer Emo Medestamei Avim Hashevet Tahora. Number one, the first Mishnah of the ninth parak of Nida, we'll get to it. The Mishnah says that if a woman is urinating, and while urinating she sees blood, it depends whether she's standing or if she's sitting. If she's standing, she's Tamei. If she's sitting, she's Tahora. Now, Hechidami, the Hargasha Yoshevet Amai Tahora, El Alav Delo Hargasha. Now, was there Hargasha or was there not a Hargasha? Because if there was a Hargasha, she's a Nida. So clearly the Mishnah over there is describing where there was no Hargasha. Viktani Almedes Tamea. And it meanwhile it says that without there being a Hargasha, and she urinates and she stands, and she sees blood, she'll be Tamea. But there was no Hargasha. So La'olam da Hargasha, Ve'emar Hargashas Me'raglaim, Havai, Almedes Hador Me'raglaim L'mekor, Ve'aisidam V'yosheves Tahara. So the Gemara gives us our first mask. What can mask the Hargasha? The act of urinating. Urinating, it could be that she's Anida, and it could be that there was a sensation, but the act of urinating masks the Hargasha. Number two. Tashma. Aid Shayanasan Tachzakar. She did an internal examination with a cloth. It's called an aid. And she puts it under a pillow. Venimsa alav dam, and then later that day or in the morning, she discovers blood on the cloth. Meaning when she did the examination at night, she just simply tucked the cloth under her pillow. So that when she wakes up, she finds blood on the cloth. So ima gol tarvi, ima shoch tame, it depends. If it's round, she's fine. But if it's kind of smeared, okay, for lack of a better term, elongated, if it's smeared, so she'll be tame. Now again, hechidami da argashe agol amay tara el alav de la argashe. It must be that there was no hargasha, because if there was hargasha, what's there to talk about? Viktani mashoch tamei lo laolam da argashe ve'emar hargashas aid havei mashach. Another mask of the hargasha. Look, she did an internal examination, which means that she had the cloth up her body. So it could be, suggested Gemara, that really she had a hargasha, but because there was a cloth up her body, another thing that masks the hargasha. Mashach vada megufa asay agol tahor. Okay, fine. Tashma. Nimsa al shalo tamein v'chayav mikarba. Nimsa al shalo osiom tamein v'chayav mikarba. Nimsa al shalo lachrazman tamein misafik v'ptur menakarban. We have done this a number of times already in our Masechta. They did an examination immediately after having relations. If he finds blood on his aver, he was mishamish anida. Okay. If she finds blood immediately after they have relations, so then she has to assume that she was bleeding even while they were having relations. Now, again, the Gemara is going, it's the same give and take. Hey chidami, ida argashe lachas mana mai peturim in a karban. Alav de la argashe b'ktani nimsa al shalai siyom tamayim v'chayav m'karban. Now the Gemara says, now there was no hargasha, because if there was a hargasha, she's anida. So there was no hargasha, and meanwhile, it says that if she finds blood, we assume that she was anida even while they had relations. And why should that be? There was no hargasha. So the Gemara says, lo la'olam da'argashe, ve'ema hargasha shamashava. Our third item that masks the hargasha is the act of relations. Meaning, while the husband and wife are having relations, it could be that she's anida, it could be that she had the hargasha, but the act of relations is masking the hargasha. Tashma. Number four. Nimsas ata omer gimel sfekas beisha. There are three suffix. Al besara, suffix tame, suffix tar, tame. Blood found on her body. A blood stain found on her body. She's tame. Al chaluka, suffix tame, suffix tar, tar. On her clothing, and we don't know where it comes from. Tar. Uve magaos, uve hesetos, halacha acharov. Now, this woman touches something. This woman shakes something. And we don't know. Is she a nida? Is she not a nida? So you go after the majority. What does that mean? And the Gemara says, "My halacha charav lavim rov yameh tameim tameya va'afagav d'lo argasha." Meaning, let's take a look. Is she a Nida most of the time, or is she not a Nida most of the time? Now, I know that sounds funny. Most of the time, a woman's not a Nida. I mean, but we did just finish the sixth parak by going over cases of a woman who is 8 days on, 8 days off, 9 days on, 9 days off. So that woman's 50-50. Okay, so maybe there are women who are a Nida more often than not. Okay. Anyway, but the Gemara is bothered. I don't understand. Did she have a Hargasha, or did she not have a Hargasha? So lo imrov yamer bargasha chazi tamei de emar hargasha v'lava daite. So the Gemara says, well, it could be that we're talking about a woman who did have a hargasha, but this woman is having a hargasha more days than not, right? Really, rachmanis for this woman. She has a hargasha more days than not, and I guess because this particular woman is having a hargasha so often and so frequently, it kind of goes unnoticed. That's a great question. It's funny. The Gemara doesn't address that question. It's a great question. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, let's pause over here. Okay. Now, Ben, your question is unresolved as of yet. We're gonna talk about that. Shmuel's case may be specific to sitting on the ground. Okay. Tomorrow.